This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
I live right in the middle of the woods. This big thing was 75 feet away from me, smells awful, devoured a whole deer carcass, and then took off and, like, screamed, screeched, and took off across the street. And I know you guys are going to think I'm crazy, but I'm dead serious. There was something very big, bigger, a lot bigger than me, out here. How long has everything happened? Immediately. I don't know if animal control, I mean, it is a very large, hairy animal of some kind.
Now, was it standing on two or four?
Well, if I told you it was standing on two legs, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm serious. It ran off at breaking limbs and trees. And it kind of screeched howls. A very creepy, scary thing. Because, like I said, I was in a tent. We were in the woods. And I just saw this freaky, scary, very large creature devour a deer and run off across the road.
Okay.
I don't know.
Is there any way that we can have an officer contact you?
Yeah, I guess it's his number.
Okay, and do you see signs of a dead deer, blood, whatever?
I'm not going to go check it out right at the moment.
Okay.
Is that okay? Like I said, I thought somebody should know there's a very large something big enough to eat a deer and as a predator.
Are you seeing someone there?
Yes, ma'am.
Did they see it too?
Yes, ma'am.
I lived in the woods for years. I swear to God, I've never seen nothing like this. It's something bigger than me.
And it...
I'm 6'3". It's bigger than me.
It's very large. He carried the carcass off. I mean...
Oh, he carried
like,
it.
With
okay.
Nothing. Like just...
But I know it picked up that deer and lost with 2 feet.
It's very large. Something that smells bad and is bigger than we are. My husband's a very large, nothing's ever scared him, and I mean, we both saw it, so.
Okay, all right, we'll have an officer patrol that area.
Strange Harbor, be strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unequivocal, the unusual, the unbelievable.
The unsomething.
The unsomething.
Your unheroes, Johnny and Bill. And each and every Sunday we do Strange Harbor, where we talk about UFOs, alien abduction, near death, afterlife, ghosts, goblins, Sasquatch, Dogman, conspiracies, all sorts of just strange topics that, you know, some people kind of raise an eyebrow when you bring them up, but others, they feel right at home, like you and I, right?
Yeah, we're right at home with each other.
Some strange news. Let's see, I talked to Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum yesterday. He's out in the field. He's a professor in Idaho, very well respected in the Bigfoot research community due to his papers on foot morphology with just anything, with humans and animals.
Right.
You know, he's just like a pro. But he's been studying alleged Sasquatch tracks, and he's capable of spotting hoax tracks just by the locomotion, the imprint, the way a person or a Sasquatch's weight...
Oh, yeah.
Leaves so that impression in the ground.
Right, because you can tell how much
pressure and
something
weight.
Weighs by the amount
yeah.
of pressure or the depression in the ground.
And the different, just the details in the track. And I believe, I could be mistaken, but I believe it was he that discovered the mid-torsal break in Sasquatch feet. And it is pretty much like a joint in the middle of their foot.
Yeah.
Where we would have it, but we wear shoes at a very early age, so it kind of affects our feet by wearing shoes. Well, they don't wear shoes, so they keep their mid-torsal break, that joint in the middle of their foot. I believe it was him that discovered this. Again, I could be wrong, but he is pretty much the leader of Sasquatch research, the leading authority. They all go to him.
He's
when
the
they,
expert.
Yeah. If there is an expert in Sasquatch, right now it's Dr. Jeff Meldrum. It used to be Grover Krantz. It used to be John Green. So I talked to him about, because he's coming to the Sasquatch Summit in November.
Yeah.
And he helps with the workshops. He puts on a workshop. And he's really thorough. with his workshops. I mean, he has handouts and he requests a whiteboard and markers, dry erase markers. I mean, he really goes all out with his workshops. He really makes them mean something. He makes them special.
Yeah.
I called him to talk about possibly having well-known Sasquatch researcher John Myazinski, and you've seen him on a lot of the Sasquatch documentaries and TV shows. He's a legend.
Yeah.
So I talked to him about that. I want to tell you what he's doing right now, but I don't think I asked permission to share it, so I'm not going to.
All
but
right.
He's got some exciting things.
Well, maybe we can do that on another show.
Maybe we can just have him on the show.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Also, Adam Davies, I contacted him. He's from England, and he recently moved to California. He is a cryptozoologist. He's had his own TV shows. He's a pretty well-respected cryptozoologist.
Right.
He was the guy that was there when the portal appeared at Dr. Matthew Johnson's research area.
Yeah.
And he was the one that reluctantly finally went on the record to talk about his experience, which he hated. He just despised that that happened. He didn't want something like that to happen. He didn't want to talk about it, especially afterwards.
Sometimes reality goes outside of the mainstream. And when you experience that, it is frightening. It is a little scary. It is a little bit like you'd say, I want to take that back. I don't want to have that experience because, you know, then I have to talk about it. And I think that that happens to a lot of people.
You can find the interview online. There's only one interview. There was only one interviewer. This was the one and only interview that he gave on the subject. Anyway, I talked to him. He's got some exciting things going on. He's going up to Alaska with a film crew, just one guy, this remote town in Alaska that was abandoned, I want to say back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, because people were being murdered by some hairy beast up there.
Oh, you know, there was a film about that, or a TV documentary. I've heard about this.
And I guess it was, you know, a flourishing mining town or, you know, something like that, and just people kept being murdered by some hairy beast in the woods, so they just dropped everything and left. He's going to go stay there for like a week. You have to fly in.
Yeah.
You have to get in by plane or helicopter, and this is how the only way you can get there. Yeah, seaplane. So that's what he's going to be doing, and then he will come to the Sasquatch Summit, which is very exciting, and he's going to share his Alaska adventures and some other things that he's got going on. So, let's see, shifting gears to the mysteries of the UFOs. There's an Olympic UFO meetup Saturday, June 16th. That's this coming Saturday from 1 to 3, Port Townsend Friends Meeting House. That's at 1841 Sheridan Avenue. And Maureen Morgan of MUFON, she puts this on. It's like the monthly meetup. This month, she's covering a program on the Skinwalker Ranch.
Oh, interesting. Now, we had a fellow that came in and talked to us about that last year.
Yeah.
And he talked about, I think he talked about the dog people as well. That's very interesting.
Yeah,
that would be an interesting thing to hear about more.
If you want more information on this Olympic UFO meetup or any of them that Maureen puts on there in Port Townsend, you can email olympic.ufo@gmail.com. So that's all I really had to talk about before we get rolling with our topics.
About the important things.
Yeah, the real important things.
The unbelievable.
So, is Alexa spying on you?
Good question.
There's been a lot of news reports about this.
Yeah. Now, here's what I can tell you.
Yeah. Do you have one?
I have one.
Okay.
I've had it for probably about 3 years now, maybe 4 years. I got it when they first came out. It records everything that you say to it. And you can go into your Alexa app, and you can go to settings, and then to history. And it keeps a log of everything you've said, everything that it's recorded about you. So sometimes I think it comes on unexpectedly. I've noticed that it used to come on all the time when we watched Jeopardy because of Alex Trebek. Every time somebody would say Alex in a certain way, it would turn on Alexa.
Mm-hmm.
So it would start listening. And what happens is when you say Alexa, that's the trigger word
mm-hmm.
that turns it on. Any word that sounds like Alexa also triggers it. So if you said...
Shmumplexa.
Shumplexa, yeah. It might trigger it. Anything that sounds similar will trigger it to start listening. So if it's turned on, basically, if it's been triggered, and you're talking, it will record everything that you say. We have had it come on, you know, without giving it the command. But again, usually we're like watching television or something. So I don't know if it's actually transmitting what you say to it somewhere. But obviously if it's recording it, and it's recording it so that you can go look at those recordings, someone else can probably look too. But I've looked at mine. There's nothing on there that, you know, that I felt was personal or in any way damaging, you know, other than I say dirty words to Alexa. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you say something to it and it responds to you. You can ask it questions. You can play games. It can turn on your lights, your television. You know, it can open your garage door. It can do amazing things. I mean, it can basically operate your whole household and make it voice controlled.
Or turn your house against you and murder you.
It probably could, but will it? That's the question. We have all this technology. We have this amazing technology, and it can be used for good, or it can be used for evil. You know, it's just like the hacking of our elections and intrusions. I mean, right now there are a lot of bad people using technology against us.
Mm-hmm.
Corporations, everything you do online, corporations capture that, especially Google. Google captures everything that you do,
mm-hmm.
and they build a profile on you. Then they sell that profile to companies that can use it to target advertising specifically to you. They can personalize it to make goods and services more enticing, very specially to you. So that makes you more vulnerable to buying things you might not otherwise buy. And, of course, that's what corporations are all about, is getting you to spend money that you don't have or to buy things you don't need, because we overproduce, we overmanufacture, and then they can't sell it all. So we have such an abundance in this country, and I think that sometimes that's a good thing. At other times, it can turn against us as well, and especially with our technology. I mean, we have all this technology. We have GPS. Your telephone has a GPS in it. So if anybody wants to find you or follow you, they can easily do that if you have a cell phone, a smartphone,
mm-hmm.
at least one with GPS. And even the you know, the cheapies, with the exception of maybe the disposables.
Well, they all ping towers. So.
Yeah, they all do. So they all have some kind of identifier, and most have GPS. They can track you right down within 2 feet of your location.
Mm.
So, I mean, we're being monitored constantly. Should we be worried about this? If it's being used to catch criminals and people that are breaking the law, I don't think we have to be worried too much about it if we're not breaking the law. But the question is, who decides how to use that, and to what end?
Amazon says they use the information to improve its voice technology, but it has the potential to live forever online.
It's true.
So, I mean, you can't even be in your house. If you don't have one of these devices, you're okay. You're just constantly monitored. That's Big Brother, man.
Well, it is. If it's constantly monitoring, like I said, if you go, you can go on your phone, go to your Alexa app, hit settings, go down to history, hit the history button, and it will give you a transcript of everything that you say to Alexa, which evidently is being held by Amazon. It's in their records because it's their app. It's their product, basically. So when you speak to Alexa, deliberately or inadvertently, it records everything you say, and you can look it up. You can look up the transcript of everything you say. So obviously it has, I don't know if anybody else can look it up, because you have to have a password to get into your Alexa app. You know, although if you're like me, you set everything for automatic opening when it's on my own device. You know, any person could access that if they had access to your device.
All you would need to do is a brute force password crack to get that information.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if anybody really wants it, passwords and all this protection are pretty useless. Any good hacker can get through that stuff. The question is, what do you have on there that people want?
Well, if you are reciting credit card numbers, how about just reciting your own Social Security number to yourself in your house? You can't do that.
Why? If Alexa isn't listening to everything that you say. It's only listening when you trigger it. And I guess that's the question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it always listening, or is it only listening after you say the trigger word?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the trigger word is Alexa. So if you say Alexa, it comes on and it begins recording what you say.
And if you have a daughter or relative named Alexa living in the same house,
well, then you better call it something else.
Call them something else.
Well, there's actually two names it will respond to. One mm-hmm. is Echo,
mm-hmm.
and the other is Alexa. But you have to choose which one you're going to use. If you live with somebody named Alexa, you don't want to use the Alexa trigger word.
Right.
You want to use the Echo. But if, say, you have two daughters, one named Alexa and the other named Echo, you're in trouble.
You sure are. Or a dog named Echo.
Or a dog named Echo.
Yeah.
Or a dog named Alexa. But it's just like I say, when we're listening to television and the television says a word that sounds like Alexa, it turns on. But it usually will respond to you. It usually tells you, once it turns on and it hears some words, it will usually respond to that. So if you're just saying nonsense, Alexa will say, I don't understand, or I don't know what you're talking about, or get a life, because this just isn't working.
Yeah.
You know, but to think that it records every word that you say every day, or everything that you do, I don't think it does.
You don't think it
does? I don't think it does.
But you're not sure.
I'm not sure. I mean, after 3 or 4 years of having one, I haven't noticed that anybody knows anything about me that I haven't said publicly. But you do. I mean, you're probably being, you're being watched everywhere you go. There are so many cameras in use in cities and towns. Probably not so much in the city of Ocean Shores, where I live. Basically because they don't have the money to manage all that stuff.
Well, but I noticed that, like, when they do homicide investigations, the investigators will travel the alleged route of whatever's happened and look for homeowners' security cams and store cams and
traffic cams.
So you are on camera.
You're
all
on
the time.
Camera almost everywhere
and
you go.
You don't know it.
Yeah. They also now have at intersections and on certain streets. They have license plate
traffic
recognitions.
Cams,
so they have a camera that actually is triggered when it sees a license plate. So it can recognize your license plate. Police have the same technology in their car so that they can actually track the license plate numbers. They can track your vehicle on that. So if your license plate was picked up at different places along a route, they know how far down that route you went.
Mm-hmm.
They can track you anywhere in the country because of all these license plate recognition cameras. We're being watched. We're being watched constantly. We're being tracked. The way that they justify this, they're going to catch criminals. But, you know, if they decided you're a criminal, then it wouldn't be hard to track you. You know, if they even suspect that maybe you're doing something subversive, you're going to be tracked.
And aren't they tracking us also to market to us, to sell us more stuff?
Sure. If they can track what gas station you use on a frequent basis or what stores you go to, they can promote advertising. I used to go to Walmart. Now, I haven't gone to Walmart in about 3 years. Mainly because Walmart has some unfair labor practices and things. So we tend to try to buy from people that practice fair labor and treat their employees well. And, you know, there's other standards, those that are economically and environmentally responsible. So when I stopped going to Walmart, I noticed I stopped getting a lot of Walmart ads. And I started getting ads from the stores that I began to frequent. Every time you go to a website on the internet, whether it's on your phone or your home computer or wherever it is, you're being tracked. They're tracking what you do, what you buy, what you look at, and then they're sending you ads that are relative to that.
Wait, what you look at?
What you look at. Yeah, so if you're watching porn online, I guarantee you, everybody knows about it. Except you.
Yeah, I'm making
that. You can't hide anything. If you're online, you know, and this was part of the, you know, part of the net neutrality deal was to kind of protect people from corporations getting their hands on the internet and using it for negative purposes, although I think that's already happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's become an advertising tool rather than a communication tool, which is just like television. Television is no longer anything other than a conduit for advertising. So even on stations like HBO, where there's no commercial time,
mm-hmm.
HBO basically manufactures much of its own programming. So whatever's on HBO was created by HBO. And in every one of those creations, there is product placement, products that are placed so that you will notice them, so that you will see them. Shapes, corporate logos. I once counted, I paused my television while watching a baseball game. And I counted the number of corporate logos in that screen capture. And basically, after doing this several times, the average was about 18 to 20 corporate logos at any given time are visible to you on the television if you're watching a baseball game. Same with football.
And race car driving.
Race cars. Oh, yeah, even more so with race cars, hockey, tennis, anything, any sporting event. Everything that we do these days is corporatized. A gentleman by the name of Mussolini, for those of you that actually have read history books and, you know, got taught history in school, and he was an Italian dictator during the same period of time that Hitler was in power. He coined a term called fascism, and what that term meant was corporate control, that corporations control everything rather than people. In a fascist world, it's all about money and corporations, power and control over people. It's not about the people. We would hope that in a democratic society similar to ours, that people are more important than governments and corporations and all of that. That all of those things, police, fire, all of our security, national security agencies, our government, were designed to serve the people. But they've come to serve corporations rather than people. Because corporations can now control what kind of legislature is passed. They get laws passed that benefit them and don't benefit the average human being, the average citizen of this country.
Coming up, according to flat earthers, Australia isn't real.
I'll bet that the 25 million people that live in Australia will be surprised to hear that.
Yeah. So we'll have that and more coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, ghosts, near-death, UFOs, alien abduction, cryptozoology.
Witches and wizards.
The strange, weird things, conspiracies. First segment, we talked about the conspiracy of Big Brother and Alexa listening to us, and we're constantly being watched and monitored, and 1984 and all that stuff. The flat earth movement seems to be growing. You said something interesting during that break, Bill, about you had mentioned how we're not being taught, like, history and science and things, and maybe this has to do with it. you're the professional clinical psychotherapist, but what's your take on the whole, well, and the flat earth movement says Australia is just a figment of our imagination.
And where do koala bears come from?
Australia.
Where do Australians come from?
Australia.
So how could it not exist? If we know about these things, we know about the things that come from there. If it didn't exist, we would not know about it. Do you know about the country of Zamboni? No, you know nothing about it because it doesn't exist. It's a device to clean ice. Flat earthers are interesting. I mean, the whole concept of flat earth is interesting.
High on this list of non-existent areas is Finland, the country some believe lies between Russia and Sweden, and that allegedly fought a valiant action against Soviet invasion in the run-up of the Second World War. A theory that was born on Reddit in 2015 was merely a fictional creation designed to create fishing quotas to aid the export of sushi to Japan from Russia. Now, last summer, another Reddit user suggested the Italian region of Molise, hope I pronounced that right, population 300,000 doesn't exist, apparently as a result of an Italian in joke, while Brazilians have had for at least 5 years an online theory that the northwestern state of Acre doesn't exist or else is a land that time forgot still populated by dinosaurs. The joke, or painstakingly well-evidenced and argued theory, that a country or region doesn't exist turns out to be one of the oldest memes on the internet. As early as 1993, German users of Usenet, a network of online discussion forums or bulletin boards, which predates the web, had a running joke that the Westphalian town of Bielefeld, population 300,000, funnily enough, was a fiction maintained by the CIA, Mossad, aliens, or some combination of the three. The joke has crossed decades, online platforms, language barriers, and international cultures, and keeps coming back. Apparently it has to do with a meme, a popularized meme. You know, a meme? You know,
right, a meme. A meme is,
well, all those pictures of
the
saying
like
on it.
Yeah, like a little advertisement on social media.
So what do you think about Australia not existing and this whole flat earthers? Why is it the flat earthers that, why are they causing all these problems?
Good question, and I think it boils down to education. We don't teach enough science in school anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't know about science and how science can prove things.
Yeah.
I mean, we can use science to prove things. There's a scientific method to prove whatever we have. We can do experiments. We start with a theory, and we do experiments to either prove or disprove the theory. And, I mean, we can do that very accurately. We also have, you know, satellites in space that are looking at not only our planet, but other planets. And all the evidence is that these planets are globular, that they are round spheres,
mm-hmm,
versus flat disks. So the Flat Earth Society believes that the Earth is a flat disk and that there's a wall that runs around the outside edge,
mm-hmm,
and then there's a dome that covers it. And that you know, the sky is just artificially,
it's like a picture?
Like a picture on this dome. And, it gets hard for me to really be serious about this stuff because we know differently. We know from science, we know from space travel, we know from everything that we've learned.
But according to some, the moon landing was a hoax.
Well,
so if the moon landing was a hoax and all these other things were staged, could that happen too? I'm trying to play the dumb advocate, devil's advocate.
Okay, let's do it. So NASA employs probably, I don't know, a million people,
mm-hmm,
and with employees and contractors. So when they shoot something up in space and they get feedback from satellites and visuals from astronauts. There's like hundreds of thousands of people involved.
They're all artists or photographers or actors. Yeah. They're all paid. They're all in on it, and they're just...
I see. And not one of them is willing to speak up.
No.
Why?
Because they want pay. Speaking up, they won't get paid.
Really? How much do they get paid, and where does the money come from?
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure... I'm trying to play the devil's... play a flat earther, and I just...
How much money would it take for you to go along with a stupid idea?
I don't know.
What if I told you I'll give you $500,000 if you walk around and tell everybody that you know that you're a chicken with feathers?
I'd do it.
You know, and you lay eggs.
I would do that for $500,000.
For $500,000?
Yeah.
But you got to convince them.
Oh, yeah, I'll just threaten them. Not kidding. I don't want to be like our government.
But people can see you, and they can see the results of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just them. We can see it. I mean, we don't just buy in, you know, in an uninformed manner. We apply what we've learned as intelligent beings to what's being said. This is the value of education, whether it's high school education or college education, whatever it is, even self-education.
Mm-hmm.
When we learn things, when we educate ourselves, it helps us to see the difference between fact and fiction. We can evaluate because we have knowledge and information. If we have no knowledge and no information, it becomes much more difficult to evaluate what's being said. I worked as a therapist for 20 years. Basically, my job was to determine whether or not people were lying to me.
Ooh.
If they were telling a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're telling a lie, they're not getting the therapy that they need.
Yeah.
They're avoiding. So I had to take all the knowledge and skill that I have to determine whether people are telling me the truth or a lie. And how much of that truth is part of the problem and how much is not. So if a person tells me that they're depressed, but they don't behave in a depressed manner,
they're lying.
They're probably not depressed. They either misunderstand or they're lying to me, maybe to get medication or to get some other kind of treatment or just to stay in treatment. Some people like to stay in treatment. Some people have been in therapy all their lives. I used to tell my client, if you're still here in a year, I'm not doing my job.
Gotcha.
You know, if I'm helping people to get well, then that needs to happen. There needs to be some wellness that comes out at the other end. Now, sometimes it does take people longer than that. But usually you can tell within a year whether or not a person is progressing, whether or not they're getting better, whether their life is improving. And we can do that because we have knowledge and we have skill and we can evaluate and we can see the truth and we can separate the truth from the fiction. When we talk about the fact that I hear people say that educated people are not really smart. Educated people are smart. It doesn't mean that they have a lot of common sense. But they're smart. They have just as much common sense as anybody else.
We all do stupid things.
We all do stupid stuff. We all have misunderstandings. I was very fortunate. I went to some really good schools.
Mm-hmm.
But there are schools in this country that aren't so good. The schools I went to were ranked in the top 4 or 5 in the nation, educationally, academically. But if you went to one that, say, was ranked 142nd, you may not get as good an education,
yeah,
you know, as a top-ranked school. So it's not only the level of education, but it's the quality of that education. And the more education we get, and again, this doesn't have to mean going to college. I mean, you can be educated in many, many ways. I like to watch cooking shows, a lot of cooking shows. I'm not a very good cook. I'm a, but I'm probably above average, mm-hmm. just slightly above average as a cook. You know, I can cook a good edible meal, mm-hmm. and I can make it taste good, and it, but it's probably not gourmet quality or restaurant quality. It's home at Bill's house quality.
Okay.
But by educating myself about food and about cooking, I can tell what's good food and what's not. I can tell what tastes good and what doesn't. I can tell what things go together and what things don't. This is how we decipher the truth.
So this how does the flat earthers, how do they decipher this as the truth to them?
Well, they have theories, unfortunately. And like I said before, all science starts with a theory. And you either prove it or disprove it. Unfortunately, there's no proof of flat Earth, but there is proof of globular Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of a spherical Earth and spherical planets. And, of course, flat Earthers say the planets don't exist. But yet, we have evidence of them. You know, we have evidence of these planets. We have devices. And there are probably, I don't know, in any space shot, there's probably 500,000, maybe 750,000 people involved on a variety of levels. It's hard to, for two people to keep a secret. How can you expect these people to keep this kind of secret all their life? They couldn't do it. They would tell somebody, and that person would in turn tell somebody. I mean, Donald Trump can't even keep secret what's said in his office. His phone calls with Vladimir Putin. We know about them because people talk. They can't keep a secret. We know about things that are going on in the world because people talk. It's really hard for people to keep a secret for a long time.
Yeah. No kidding, huh?
Yeah. And the other issue is that sometimes when we talk to people and we tell them something, it gets twisted in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So if I tell you the sky is blue and you tell somebody else the sky is blue, and that person says, well, the sky is dark blue, and the next person says, well, the sky is kind of azure blue, and the next person says, well, the sky is kind of teal blue, and the next guy person says, well, the sky is actually the shell of a turtle. Suddenly, what was said, the sky is blue, becomes something entirely different from
isn't
what was said.
Isn't there a name
originally
for that? With monkeys or something?
You mean the 100 monkey theory?
Something like that.
Yeah, when you teach, you know, 100 monkeys to do something, then the rest of them kind of know it instinctively.
No, that wasn't what I was talking about.
But
just you whisper something in one ear, and then they pass it on, and
yeah,
then they pass it on, and then they pass it on, and then by the time...
There is a name, but I don't remember what the name of that is.
Oh.
But you're also talking about collective consciousness. When we learn things, when a number of people learn the same thing, our collective conscious begins to pick that up so that other people learn more instinctively.
Hmm.
But, you know, I suppose you could teach people all the wrong things. But again, we have science. That science provides evidence and not just theory.
What if science is wrong?
What if it is? But There's something called the scientific method, which is a way of proving things.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just taking your hypothesis or theory and saying, this is the result I came up with. You have to come up with the same result over and over and over. You have to be able to apply certain facts and ideas and principles to what you're studying. And you have to come up with a result. And then you have to be able to replicate that result over and over. When I was in grad school, I had to do a research paper. I not only had to do the research, but I had to apply the research and then come up with you know, some working knowledge about what I found out from that research. Then I had to be able to replicate that. I had to be able to go back to another group of people, ask the same questions, and try to get the same responses. If I can do that, and I can replicate it two or three times, then it becomes factual. But if you can't replicate it, then you haven't proven anything.
So how can a person see for themselves if the planet is round without taking someone else's word for it?
Well, you could go up on a mountaintop and look out, and you would see the curvature of the Earth. You can go up in an airplane and look down, and you can see how the Earth curves.
Couldn't that just be terrain, just the flat Earth just kind of wavy? You know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say?
So if there's a flat Earth, now, I understand the whole thing about Australia, because we've always called Australia the planet, or the planet, not the planet, the country down under.
Mm-hmm.
So, if it's down under, is it underneath the disk? I mean, we also know that the Earth is globular because of things that take place. We know that we're not sealed in a bubble, as flat earthers believe, because we've shot things outside that bubble, like rockets, airplanes, satellites. We have satellites that orbit the globe. We have satellites that maintain geosynchronous orbit, which means they basically stay in the same place. But we also have satellites that orbit the Earth, that go all the way around. So how do we do that if the Earth is flat?
Adding to this conspiracy of the flat Earth and Australia not being into existence, NASA recently released a headline promising exciting new Mars findings from the Curiosity rover roaming the planet since 2012, and their news conference will uncover what the space agency has found. So if it's a flat Earth, that means Mars doesn't exist, right?
Right.
And this NASA statement would be adding to the conspiracy that the Earth is flat, right?
Right.
So,
well-educated NASA scientists have decided to hoax you.
They're actors.
Right, they're actors.
And
paid
actors
and artists.
I'm trying to be a flat earther, Bill, and it's hard.
I worked for the government for a long time.
And they're great at everything.
And when I went to work for the government, I had to basically prove who I was and what my credentials were.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to verify all that. I had to verify where I went to college, what I studied. I had to verify what my grades were. And it's the same way with anybody that works for the government. They have to verify what they do. So it's the doctors that worked at the VA hospital that I worked at. You know, they had to verify that they were doctors. They had to prove it by being licensed and such. This means that you would have to have, in order to hoax them, you would have to have an awful lot of people involved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are people that have scammed the system.
Yep.
But they're a small number, and they almost always get caught scamming the system.
Yeah.
One of my best friends where I worked was a doctor from Germany. And, of course, because he was not from this country, he was scrutinized pretty heavily before he was hired. But in the process of renewing his credentials, they found a discrepancy.
Uh-oh.
And they suspended him until they were able to straighten it out. So it only took him about a week. He was suspended for a week. But
with or without pay?
Probably without, but no, probably with. I don't know. I don't know what they did. Doctors get paid differently in the VA system. They found this. They found this discrepancy in his credentials. But they were able to sort it out. It was an error in the processing of his credentials. And when they went back, they were able to get the original credentials and verify that he was a licensed doctor and that, you know, he went to all the proper schools and got all the proper degrees. So we have ways of verifying things. We have ways of checking up on people to make sure they're telling us the truth. And that helps us to understand that conspiracies are very difficult to pull off. And when you talk about a conspiracy that involves, you know, probably a million people, it's highly unlikely that there's any kind of conspiracy. Conspiracies only work if nobody knows about them.
Well, how can the whole flat earth thing be gaining ground and supporters and believers?
Two reasons. Okay. One, gullibility. And two, con men. There are con men out there who will sell you anything, including a flat earth. They make a lot of money. The Flat Earth Society makes money on the people that are gullible enough to believe in the flat earth.
And that'll do it for this episode. For more info, past episodes are archived. If you want to email us and yell at Bill, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.